we were on commercial.
Days when the rains came.
Then we came back with John Locke. His books include Dumbing Down the Courts, More Guns, Less Crime. I highly encourage you to read that. And he's a very agile mind. I like the fact that his mind is in play. He follows the facts. John, how are you?
Doing great. Always great to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you, Johnny. It's fun. It's ironic that we're talking about Obamacare this segment. And I just see in red on Drudge, the director of the Colorado Health Exchange has been indicted for fraud and theft. So I'd say the naganization of health care is upon us. But let's talk about I'm cold calling you with that story, so we won't go there. Let's just talk about the 3.3 million they've announced that have signed up. And the fact is, I'd need to know what their definition of signed up is as opposed to mine, right?
Right. Well, I mean, they've been caught multiple times kind of fudging these numbers. First of all, they've been including a lot of people on Medicaid, for example, who really weren't getting it for the first time. The whole bragging point for this program was supposedly that people would be eligible for coverage who previously weren't. But they were simply counting people who were rolling over the program, re-signing up for it as new signees. And that doesn't make any sense. I mean, in fact, the vast majority of people that they were counting that way, something like 90%, were people who already had coverage. And you know, you're alluding to another fact, and that is just because somebody lists that they have their intention to go and pay for the program doesn't mean that they're actually going to move the rest away and actually pay for it.
Yes, it would appear that one of the pre-existing conditions that will be covered under Obamacare is intention deficit disorder. Because until somebody sends a check, I'm not sure that they've... Listen, I think a lot of people think Obamacare one thing. If you had to ask me what the Rorschach was in the hoi polloi about Obamacare, is their health care is free somewhere down the road. And we'll get there sooner than later because it's been so inept. But how many of these people are showing up, finding out that not only do they not have theirs anymore, they have something else, and it costs more? How many of them have actually paid towards that?
Right. I mean, there's been a big increase in insurance premiums across the board, but people who have been signing up for Obamacare have been in real sticker shock. I mean, you look at whether it's young people or older people, both have seen big increases. Younger people, because they're essentially being taxed to finance subsidies to older people, have been particularly hit with it. You find for people signing up who are 27, you'll see something like about a 75% average increase in their premiums compared to what they had before. And I assume when a lot of, you know, the rubber hits the road and they actually have to start paying for this, some of those people are going to say, look, why should I pay for a bad deal for insurance? Why should I pay a lot more out of my pocket than I'm going to possibly get back in terms of the insurance benefits?
I think people are just going to show up, get things done. Nobody asks you for cash on the hog's head right at the desk. Put it on the thing, never pay it. This will be the new scofflawism, I would assume, in this country, right? The health care, medical bills, the new traffic ticket.
Well, you know, you're bringing up a basic point here, and that is, people respond. They change their behavior when you go and you make things more costly for them to do. And that's one thing that, unfortunately, the Congressional Budget Office and its estimates continually, as well as the Obama administration, has been assuming that people aren't going to be changing their behavior. So, you know, just this last week we had this revelation from the Congressional Budget Office that, geez, when you increase people's taxes effectively because of Obamacare, maybe they won't work as much. And so, you know,
I know that makes me shudder, John. That literally in my adult lifetime, that's the wildest thing I've heard coming out of government.
I mean, you know, I understand that there was a rush to go and get this through. If you read the director of the Congressional Budget Office blog this Monday, he put out a blog post saying, look, this year, we decide to look closely at the impact on labor from Obamacare. This is 2014.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is something you would hope government would have done carefully before they go and vote on something that's going to be running $1 trillion spending from the federal government, even when it was first put in that they thought. Of course, now they realize that they underestimated those costs for many different reasons. But, you know, here we have huge effects that are going to be happening for lots of individuals in many different ways. They assumed, for example, that firms were essentially going to keep the programs if they already had them. Well, you have dramatic increases in costs. I know my own insurance bill's gone up like 82% for Obamacare. And it's just, you know, to think that that's not going to have any effect on firms' decisions whether or not to keep on providing insurance for their workers or not is just, it's just not real.
John, I think people always think that Barack Obama is sitting in the White House tremulous about all this. I think he realizes what an utter win-win is. If this works, it's a win for him. If this doesn't work, it's a bigger win for him because we'll get to single-payer government care probably in the next decade, right?
Well, you look at Moody's and other rating agencies that go and rate the financial health of different firms. You know, they rate bonds, whether they're junk bonds or what have you. And they've just significantly downgraded the outlook for the insurance industry because, you know, the huge losses that they're suffering or going to be suffering as a result of this, nowhere near as many people are signing up. They have the wrong mix of people who are signing up for this for these programs. You know, not healthy people. You have older people who are less healthy, so their costs are going to be higher in terms of payouts than they would have thought as a percentage of the people who are enrolled. And it doesn't take a genius. I mean, these are people who have their money at stake and trying to figure out whether the stocks for these companies are going to go up or down. And they have a real interest in trying to get this right. And they're saying, look, it looks a lot worse for the financial health for these insurance companies. And we've seen a number of insurance companies just leave states like California or other places as a result of this. And a lot of them are just going to be leaving the business completely. I've talked to one guy who's head of the seventh largest insurance company in the United States. And basically they think they're going to be leaving the health insurance market because of the losses that they're suffering, because they see how much this is a house of cards. You know, I'll just give you one simple example. Mm-hmm. For about 6 months during the year, you essentially can wait until you get sick before you go and buy your insurance. Well, if there's no penalty for you waiting until you get sick, why not wait until you get sick before you go buy the insurance? Exactly. And if you do that, so we only have people who have the insurance all the time are sick people, and healthy people wait until they get sick before they go and buy it. What do you think that's going to do to premiums?
Yeah, this is like setting up an all-you-can-eat restaurant next to the Papillon prison, where they let people out and then you have them in, and it's not a good business model. Talking to John Lott, and you can follow John on Twitter at John R. Lott with two T's, Jr., John R. Lott, J.R., And, Johnny, I have to congratulate you, my friend. I've got around a minute and a half. You're a new title I see here in your IBID, President of the Crime Prevention Research Center. Tell me a little bit about it, John.
Thanks for bringing it up. Look, there's a lot of debate about crime and guns, and I think a lot of misinformation that's out there that really endangers people's lives in many ways. I mean, you just had this special on ABC News where they had all their news segments during the day literally trying to scare people about owning guns in the home, and we could spend a half hour just talking about the errors that they have there. But I think quality academic research that can be done to go and actually kind of measure both the costs and the benefits of people being able to go protect themselves. What are the risks and what are the benefits? And I think there are a number of academics that we're working with the Crime Prevention Research Center, to try to do serious scholarly work on these questions.
CrimePreventionResearchCenter.org, folks, if you want more information. And can I tell you something about John Lott? You will never see him close his mind down as the climatology community has. You'll never hear that the science is settled on this. You'll hear John nimble, agile, following the facts and relating them to you. Thank you, John, for being one of the last shoe leather guys out there, my friend.
It's great talking to you. Thank you.
All right, John. Good man. If he ever flips on that, he'll tell you about it. He won't just double down on the bet. Dennis Miller Show.
This is the Dennis Miller Show.